Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Operation Confidence Radio Talk Show, America's Invisible Heroes, with Consuela Mackey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. Happy Black History Month, and thank you for tuning in to America's Invisible Heroes, a show dedicated to our veterans and their families. Yes, I'm your host, Consuela Mackey, Executive Director of a grassroots nonprofit organization, veterans call Operation Confidence. For those who may be new to the show, American Invisible Hero strives to provide a platform to be able to share their experiences, heartfelt stories, resources, challenges, and accomplishments. Now I'd like to introduce you for co-host, Air Force veteran and Operation Confidence board member Matt Davidson, U.S. Army Reserve veteran, and also aboard Charles Whitehead, and our announcer, Leah Granderson. Good afternoon to you all.
Good afternoon, Connie, Leah, Charles. Good afternoon to our veteran listeners.
Good afternoon, Ms. Connie, Matt, Charles, and welcome LA Talk Radio listeners.
Oh, Charles.
All right, let's continue.
Okay, you forgot to say your good afternoons as well.
Let me say that in the beginning. Sorry, but I'm going to restart that. Good afternoon. Okay. I hope everybody's having a great day and a great pandemic, safeness.
That's right. Okay, Leah. We're going to wait for Matt.
Oh,
I already said good afternoon.
Yes, I thought we were going to say talk about Black History Month for February and have Charles read a little bit about that.
That's right.
All right. Let's talk about Black history. Today, we'll talk about Colonel Gregory D. Gasson. He went to the United States Marine Military Academy, a class of 89 graduate. Relinquished command of USAG Fort Belvoir yesterday and is retiring after 25 years of distinguished service. After losing both legs in combat, he went on to become the first double amputee to command a U.S. installation.
Well, congratulations to this veteran. And today I would like to talk about the need for transformative veteran and first responder care. The Gary Sinise Foundation Avalon Network addresses the epidemic of invisible wounds that afflict our nation's veterans and first responders. Traumatic brain injuries and post-traumatic stress affect nearly one out of every three military personnel deployed to war zones since 2001. An estimated 30% of our nation's first responders are also dealing with depression and post-traumatic stress. The Gary Sinise Foundation Avalon Network builds upon the foundation's long history of supporting the mental wellness needs of our nation's heroes and their families. Over the next several years, the foundation will establish additional treatment and training sites nationwide for veterans and first responders experiencing traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, and substance abuse. Utilizing proven treatment training and rehabilitation methods from Boulder Crest Foundation and the Marcus Institute for Brain Health, the Gary Sinise Foundation Avalon Network is envisioned as a leading cognitive health and mental wellness provider for our veterans, first responders, and their families. If you are a veteran or a first responder experiencing traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, or substance abuse, the Gary Sinise Foundation Avalon Network wants to help. For more information, call 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255.
Well, as always, Matt, you gave some good information. Thank you so much. Now, Leah, please introduce our guest speaker.
You got it, Connie. Today's America's Invisible Heroes talk show has a different format. A discussion panel titled Veterans and the Criminal Justice System, Challenges and Opportunities, hosted by attorney Danielle Sherrod. Attorney Sherrod is a Burbank, California-based corporate law and litigation attorney and a member of the Operation Confidence Board. She currently serves as principal of Pasadena Law Partners and counsel of Rastegar Law Group, a civil rights and wage and hour class action law firm. The panelists are Lola Rockwell Brown and Aaron Burris. Lola Rockwell Brown is a program and site supervisor at House of Dignity, a safe house for veterans on parole, and a transitional housing program for homeless veterans. Aaron Burris is a director of business development for Inside Circle, a nonprofit whose Spartan Evolution program serves veterans through the reentry process. Take it away, Attorney Sherrod.
Thanks so very much, Leah. I am honored and delighted to have two extraordinary guests join us today, Lola Rockwell Brown and Aaron Burris. Both guests represent incredible organizations that provide vital support to the community of veterans in Northern California. Lola Rockwell Brown started working in the nonprofit field in 2000 as a graveyard shift outreach worker in San Francisco. Lola now serves as program and site supervisor for House of Dignity, a transitional housing facility for homeless veterans operated by the nonprofit Operation Dignity. Operation Dignity is her forever job. She considers working with veterans to be both an honor and a privilege. Aaron Burris, a veteran, now spends his days working as director of business development for the nonprofit Inside Circle. There was, however, a time when Aaron believed that he was going to die in prison. After serving 22 years of a life sentence, Aaron has found peace and fulfillment through his work at Inside Circle, where he also works as a facilitator. Aaron brings to his work his generous spirit and ability to hold others compassionately in their truth. Lola, Aaron, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you, Danielle.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. Now, you both have such fascinating and inspiring backgrounds. Tell me a bit about how you began working with veterans and supporting their transitions out of the criminal justice system. Lola, let's start with you.
Well, you know, I was had just left a position working in the foster care system, and I wanted to work with a different population, and I was looking for new challenges. And so in my research, I came upon Operation Dignity, and in doing the research around the agency itself, it sounded like it was going to be a great fit for me. And I think that the population that I hadn't really heard a lot about as far as veterans, my father was a veteran, but besides that, I hadn't heard a lot about the plight of veterans in our country so much. And so it touched me to be able to perhaps get a position where I could serve a population of people that have actually served me and my family.
Oh, that's really incredible. Aaron, I know that the challenges and opportunities facing formerly incarcerated veterans are in many ways quite personal for you. Tell us about your incredible journey to Inside Circle.
It actually started on the inside in 2000. I was invited to the group, and I began doing my personal transformational work. And at the same time, running parallel to all that, every yard I'd ever been to always had a veterans group, a veterans support group inside prison. And it really didn't strike me odd for a while to go, wait a minute, why is there such a presence of veterans here? Until I was actually released from prison and began to try to reenter society and started seeing some of the challenges that just as a veteran, not even as formerly incarcerated, that I saw connecting to services, everything from obtaining records to, you know, employment, just the struggle, and then add on incarceration on top of that, learning to navigate a county veteran service office and, you know, the regional office here in Oakland, learning to navigate that was a struggle. But the entire time that I was in prison, I was always connected to a veterans organization on the inside. I usually served as a veterans information officer and would connect outside, you know, helping people get their DD, the basics, the DD-214, and if they had benefits going, how that worked if you're incarcerated, it's a reduced amount. And basically arming veterans with information. Now, Inside Circle had a special relationship because beginning in about 2006, Special Forces began to come in as part of our intensive weekend and do our inside intensive training. And we developed a really, really strong relationship with them. And the need for the emotional component of the healing that we do was really evident. And we're really good at dealing with PTSD. And there's a lot of that in institutionalization also. So it all just kind of came together for me.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that because our audience is comprised of many, many veterans, if you'd just share with us briefly a bit about your really distinguished service history, I know that would be very much appreciated. Can you tell us about your time in the Gulf War and otherwise?
Yeah, I joined the military at the time and that the world was at peace, and then the 100-hour of war was upon us. Saddam Hussein decided that he would move down and invade Kuwait and the oil fields. And I deployed with my unit. I was with the 2nd Armored Division out of Fort Hood, Texas, and I deployed to the Gulf. And we hung out in Saudi Arabia for a while and then went up to the berm and then went over. And I was part of a joint task force with the 2nd Marine Division, the 2nd Armored Division, that just basically went up the coast and made a hard left. It was a tank brigade-sized unit of the 2nd Armored Division, 1st Tiger Brigade, and all the other services. And we got involved really, really heavy. I suffered some PTSD there. I can talk about it. Just the engagement, you know, with them, with the Iraqi forces. And it was war at the end of the day, and they don't play by the rules that we play by, you know, and that was my exposure as far as, like, you know, being a combat vet.
Certainly. And it sounds like there was a link certainly between the PTSD experience and your incarceration ultimately. Can you talk a bit about that?
Oh, absolutely. When I came back, the educational opportunity was there for me for the GI Bill. But school had never been my thing. And when I went back, employment didn't work out for me. I had trouble adapting. What was right there available for me was street life. And I had grown up in some hard areas and neighborhoods, and I had old school ties from my youth. It was easy to fall right back into the streets. It was a much more accepting culture, especially dealing with mental health issues and, conforming. I had anger issues. I couldn't keep a job. And I fell into drug use and right into gang life. I went back to what I knew.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. I know that certainly resonates with the experience of unfortunately, many members of the veteran community, or certain members of the veteran community that have gone through similar experiences. For each of you, I'd really love to know how your respective organizations assist veterans with histories of involvement in the criminal justice system. Lola, how does that play out at Operation Dignity?
Well, we operate 15 shelter beds and 91 transitional housing beds for veterans and their families that are experiencing homelessness due to whatever the circumstance is. I absolutely have created space for veterans that are coming out of incarceration to have a safe place to come to where they have time and opportunity to stabilize within the community without the pressure of trying to hit the ground running as far as, you know, get a job and start paying rent and provide groceries for yourself and all of that intense pressure that happens when you get released from prison or jail. And so my program gives you an opportunity once you are released to have a space that you can call your own, where we provide 3 meals a day. Also, we have case management services where my case management team offers complete wraparound services for whatever it is that the formerly incarcerated veteran needs. That goes from the basics, such as a DD-214 or a proof of service letter, all the way up to, of course, permanent housing. And not just permanent housing, but 9 times out of 10, permanent housing that someone can afford. We are providing support around employment in regards to mock interviews, clothing, resume writing, confidence building. We are connecting you to service-connected pensions. If there's something available, we're turning over every stone to take a look at that. We are truly trying to support the whole veteran that's gotten out of jail or prison without judgment. And again, there's no pressure. You can stay up to 2 years at my program. And if you're not able to afford the fees, then you don't have a fee.
Wow, that's really amazing. So tell us, just logistically, are folks referred to Operation Dignity as they're coming out of the justice system, or do they self-refer, or is it a mix of both?
It's really a mix of both. We have connections with different agencies and at least one prison, which is San Quentin, to let the veteran know that they have an opportunity to transition into my program. We actually brought in our first official reentry client last year, and we worked with this client all the way from while he was still incarcerated, all the way up into his exit date, all the way to his isolation for the COVID-19 requirements to our front door. And that was almost a year ago, and this particular vet now is experiencing a great deal of success. He's stable, he's found employment, and he's got the time and the space to get readjusted. This gentleman served over a decade in prison, and I definitely believe he hasn't experienced the pressures that others that have gotten out of prison without this opportunity, without that stable environment to come to, which has led to even more success for him.
That's really amazing. Aaron, I was really pleasantly surprised or just really astounded to see that Inside Circle has certain facilitation programs and resources that are specifically geared to veterans. And I'm thinking specifically about the Spartan Evolution Program. Can you talk a bit about the services that Inside Circle provides generally, but also about the unique Spartan Evolution Program for veterans?
Yes, ma'am, I can. We operate out of what's called direct experiential learning, which is group processes where there's a lot of personal transformational work. There's a lot of emotional body work involved. And it's for people to really get in self-directed healing emotionally. And it all goes back to a theory around core childhood trauma wounds or any major impactful trauma wounds in our life and how to resolve them in a healthy way. And what happened was we got in contact with veterans that were coming in for our regular groups inside Folsom. And what came out was the guy basically said, look, not only am I losing guys when I was in combat over there, I come back and now they're killing themselves. And he started talking about how veteran suicide had showed up. And it made us look at, you know, like, okay, we're resolving this issue with this guy in this group, but at the same time and supporting him, but like, wait, is there a larger problem here? And we got to looking. And basically, there's somewhere between, the numbers are roughly between 16 to 18 veteran suicides a day. And that number comes out of a 2017 study. And then tying that with our experience on the inside, we started looking at, okay, suicide rates coming back. Is that coming back from combat? Is that coming out of institutions? I mean, is this the whole veteran population? And we've got roughly 19 million veterans in this country. And then other things started popping up. Substance abuse disorder. We're talking about over a million veterans suffer with this. 25% of that is roughly illicit drugs. 80% of that is alcohol. And that a lot of that is still in active duty military populations. And we started really looking at that and crunching numbers and going, wait a minute, we got a big problem here. And then we looked at the incarcerated population. And there's 986 people incarcerated for every 100,000 people in the United States. And what we learned is that also about another 100,000 per capita number is 855 of those are veterans, but those are two separate categories. So basically about 1,700 people locked up, 855 of them are veterans out of a population of 200,000. And it's really interesting. So we've been to Correlate and we went, how do we support these people? So in conjunction with our outside intensive process groups, what we did is we began, veterans begin to attend these outside groups, and through donations and get supported for their tuition, cover their travel, their lodging, you know, their basic to get them out for a four-day weekend and some really intensive therapy. Because what we do with this direct experiential learning and this process, this four-day, this immersion, is they find hope. They find the truth of who they are. They find a camaraderie with people that understand what it's like to live with PTSD, anxiety, depression. And when we came up with Spartan Evolution, we really went to look at some things that we had to do. We wanted to increase empathy. We wanted to reduce stress, trauma recovery, emotional decompression, and we wanted to strengthen social connections, because these were all the areas that we were struggling in, both incarcerated and veterans. So it was a perfect marriage. And all we do is they come to a group. We don't do a veteran-only training or outside intensives. They process with the entire collective from the community, formerly incarcerated veterans. People come that are dealing with, you know, just everyday problems in life. Depression, even addiction, and everybody comes together. And the veteran just kind of filters right in the room and finds out that the problems he has is just like everyone else. And everyone else suddenly sees a veteran and goes, oh, he's got the same problems too. And we kind of see each other as like a tribe and start going, wait a minute, we've all got problems. Let's work together to solve.
That's amazing. I mean, this is a really nice segue. I mean, I think that everyone listening is astounded by some of the statistics you cited, and I'm really interested in hearing about the greatest challenges veterans face as they attempt to exit the criminal justice system. You certainly mentioned several of them, combat PTSD and ensuing mental health issues, veteran suicide. I'd love to hear, you know, what you perceive from a logistical perspective, that transition to civilian life. What are some of the greatest challenges? I mean, Aaron, I imagine you faced some of these very issues in your own transition.
Yeah, yes, I did. Well, first thing is, in custody, reporting of military service is right around 2%, as compared to actually about 10% of the population. And it correlates really strangely to a statistic in there. Out of 17 veteran suicides a day, 11 of those 11 veterans that commit suicide are not connected to VA healthcare in any type of way. It's almost like there's an aversion to accepting help from the VA. Kind of like, you know, I've heard some Vietnam vets describe it that I'm familiar with. They said, well, these are the same people who messed me up. Why would I mess with them? It's that type of aversion. And they want to get as far away from military service because that's where the trauma connected to. And I think that another struggle that really is isolation. Isolation, not feeling connected, not having a sense of community. And there's such a brotherhood in military service. I'll never forget my basic training buddy, my foxhole buddy. I know his mom's name. I know his name. I know his brother's names. I know where he grew up, what he went to school. Because you really make that bond in the military. Right. All of a sudden, right. The problems that society has goes away. There's no racial line. There's no religious line. We're all kind of in this together, and we want to survive it, and we bond. And when they come out of military service, they're dropped back into a world that doesn't play by those rules. Sure. Isolation, depression to follow.
That makes perfect sense. Lola, what kinds of challenges do you most commonly see among transitioning veterans? I mean, in the case of House of Dignity, Operation Dignity, many of whom are also facing homelessness as a primary concern.
Well, just as Aaron has said, some of those same things, it's something that hasn't been mentioned is the 290 population of veterans that has served their country and gotten charged and convicted of a crime that puts them on the sex registry. Those particular veterans coming out of prison really don't have anything. They are very, very limited in where they can be housed, depending on the type of discharge that they've received. They might have limited benefits coming from the VA. There is a stigma, of course, associated with that type of crime. And so sometimes they experience being ostracized by their own community. But the truth of the matter is that if you served your time and you're coming out of prison and you want, and we're demanding as a society that people be rehabilitated, well, we have to give people an opportunity to be rehabilitated. So if someone is convicted of a crime that makes me uncomfortable, don't they still deserve an opportunity to get back on their feet? They come out, they have no place to go, they come to my transitional housing program. We're working diligently to find some place for them that where they can become employed, where their background won't be held against them, or we're getting older veterans who were convicted of a 290 crime from 30 years ago, right? Which may have been something as simple as urinating in public. They were urinating in public because they were homeless and there was no bathroom available to them. 30 years later, they're still on that registry, even though they haven't reoffended. And they're about to be aged out of the employment population period, right? So how do you help those people? They've never had an opportunity to get back on their feet because we haven't given them one, right? That's and right. So people are, veterans are challenged with PTSD, a healthy paranoia of the government sometimes, hopelessness, despair. Yes, addiction. Yes, alcoholism. Yes, mental illness. But I think one of the biggest challenges is the lack of them being given a fair opportunity to succeed. Mm-hmm. You've already, as a veteran, paid your debt to society by serving your country. You've already done more for me than I could ever do for you. But yet, we're not putting in the extra work that's needed to really provide veterans with the support that they need.
Yeah, that's really helpful. I mean, all of this really leads me to wonder if there are legal and social service resources that are available to veteran parolees and even veterans in general that the average veteran might not be aware of. Do you all have any anything that you can tell us about those potentially hidden resources that aren't always incredibly visible to the veteran community? Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll say this. I don't know about visible or invisible, but the Swords to Plowshares was the best resource for me. They helped me through everything. They got me with the social help that I needed, and they helped walk me through the system. I couldn't have did it without them.
That's amazing.
I want to add to that. I was going to say Swords to Plowshares was at the top of my list as well. But also Justice for Vets, that's a website, the Vet Center. Another website is Make the Connection, as well as really trying to, at least for the people that work or that are at my program, we connect them with services in Oakland through the VA and connecting them with a VA liaison that can do a deeper dive to understand what's available for them, what's out there for them. That's a great way to go to definitely tap into what you have that's on, that you've left on the table, right? And something that's really popped for a lot of veterans that I've had contact with is the yearly stand down that's put on for homeless veterans. It didn't happen this year, of course, right? But this stand down, they offer shelter throughout the event, food, personal care, haircuts, personal care, supplies, clothing, picture ID services, healthcare screenings, healthcare services, eye care, dental care, VA benefits counseling, general benefits. They actually have courts. They actually have judges that come out to stand down in order to resolve anything that's outstanding for veterans. Stand down is probably the world's best kept secret when it comes to what's available. And so that veteran that is, you know, not wanting to be connected with the government at all, if nothing else, become connected for two things: to see what pension is available to you, and because the government is trying to rectify those things that they've made mistakes about in the past, as well as stand down. You can take care of a lot of your issues once a year at a three-day event that won't cost you anything.
That's amazing. I certainly had not heard about the stand down, even having worked with veterans for many, many years. And we'll be sure to include web links for those sites and the resources that have just been mentioned by Aaron and Lola on the Operation Confidence website following the show. I'll say that although this has been a really rich discussion, I feel as though we've barely scratched the surface here. To conclude, I mean, in keeping with our theme today of challenges and opportunities, I'd be interested in briefly hearing both of your thoughts on what political action or criminal justice reforms are needed to advance the interests of veteran parolees and, for that matter, other veterans as they pursue rehabilitation and reintegration. Aaron, what do you think?
I think it's two phase. I think that the first is informational, empowering the veteran if they're justice involved in whatever system that is. And at some point that military service should count for something. I'm not saying let him get away with anything because he's a veteran. What I'm saying is meet him where he's at. And really, let's look at mental health issues. Let's look at adjustment. Let's look at all this. I think we talked about this the first time we talked. Back in World War II, Patton slapped a soldier and called him a coward for being shell-shocked, you know? And we've got roughly 6 million Vietnam veterans left and about 10 to 12,000 prior to Vietnam left. All of our other veterans of that 19 million are after Vietnam, which brings us up to the Gulf War and on. We have a huge mental health crisis in our communities right now around this. Yeah. They need support, and they're not told welcome home. I mean, we have the political climate after Vietnam where they were shunned basically when they came back. And we're still not at the point where we're welcoming them back. We're celebrating them. We're giving them a discount at Home Depot. You know, you get the Denny's dinner. But where's the support? Where's the support for the person who's reluctant to engage? Where's the extra effort, the extra helping hand to a veteran? Not just services, but that hug, that we love you. Thank you for what you did. We honor your sacrifice. And that will prevent even being in the justice system. Mm-hmm. That will prevent a lot of it. So it's prevention, mm-hmm. informational. There's a lot there.
Wow, thank you for that. I think the gratitude component is really essential here. Lola, what are your thoughts?
I think putting policies in place that are truly centered on rehabilitation for the veteran, policies that will call for sentencing judges to think about not just the crime that the veteran has committed, but the whole person that committed the crime and all the factors that have contributed to making the decision to commit a crime as a choice. It's less about sentencing and more about how did you get to this place where your decision was to commit a crime? Veterans court, getting our veterans in to veterans court, which are all over the U.S., right? Instead of trying them in a normal court, a veterans court where they are actually taking everything into consideration, because the things that have happened to veterans are different than everyone else. And how can we not include that in our thinking process when we are looking at having to sentence a veteran? Rehabilitation, that's the key. It's not just a word, it's an action. And lastly, the question is not what's wrong with you, veteran, but what happened to you, mm-hmm. so that I can truly help you.
Wow.
Amen. Amen right there.
Thank Ditto. You for that. I think we could all give that an amen. And this has been an incredible discussion. Lola Rockwell Brown, Aaron Burris, on behalf of America's Invisible Heroes, the Operation Confidence family, and our listeners, I want to thank you both so very much for sharing your insights. I'm sure that everyone listening has been informed and inspired by your stories. We are immensely grateful. Thank you. Please come back and visit with us again very soon.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
I would like to chime in and, as always, you came through and conducted an amazing panel. And I can't say enough about your incredible panelists, Lola and Aaron. You all have been just wonderful and gave us some incredible information that we all of our listeners, and including the team, needed to know. So you're always welcome to come back. And I'm by Attorney Surratt being a board member, she has to put together a meeting, a Zoom meeting, so that we can all talk about what Operation Confidence is doing, because our goal is something similar to what your organization is doing, Ms. Lola. Okay, so please, let's get together with the meeting. And again, I want to thank you so much for all of this wonderful information. And of course, our attorney, Surratt, kudos to you, girlfriend.
Thank you so much. I just want to mention that more information regarding the resources and organizations discussed today will be at Operation Confidence's website, which is www.operationconfidence.org. Thank you so much. Over to you, Consuela.
Thank you. Charles, you're going to share a little hot news for us today, right?
Yes, today's hot news. Are you a veteran? Do you need help? Veterans can contact the California Association of County Veterans Service Officers. They are an organization of professional veterans advocates. The County Veterans Service Officer plays a critical role in the veterans advocacy system and is often the initial contact in the community for veterans services. A County Veterans Service Officer, the CAC VSO, is committed to provide a vital and efficient system of services and advocacy for veterans, their dependents, and survivors. To find the CVSO office nearest you, you can call 844-737-8838. That's a toll-free number. That's again, that's 844-737-8838. Key in your zip code when prompted, and your call will be immediately transferred. Alternatively, you may visit www.cacvso.org. That's www.cacvso.org. Click on Contact Us and then click on your county or a residence to view a list of CVSO office locations, phone numbers, and hours of location, and hours of operation, that is. I'm sorry. One more time before I go. That phone number, 844-737-8838, and www.cacvso.org. Now to you, Leah.
Awesome hot news, Charles. Thanks so much. I'm going to hand it over to Matt so he can help us acknowledge a special American Invisible Hero.
Well, this soldier served in the Army's 25th Infantry Division in Vietnam from December 1968 to December 1969. He was just 18 years old. Like many other Vietnam veterans, his welcome back to the States was nothing short of hostile and apathetic. Stepping off the plane would only be the beginning of a long struggle with the physical and mental scars of war. He was different. Every night from the time he returned, he had night terrors at 2 a.m. He would wake up, scream, and yell, "Look out, get down." Then he would walk the hallway of the family house, which he believed to be was a perimeter patrol. He couldn't face people. It took a toll on his family. In 2005, he was diagnosed with diabetes. His doctor recommended that he contact the Department of Veterans Affairs that it was likely a result of exposure to Agent Orange. And later in his life, the physical effects of Agent Orange exposure during his service in Vietnam began to appear, along with the depression and anxiety from post-traumatic stress. He developed diabetes and heart disease that he would have succumbed to in the ailments in 2011. He died in a car accident in August that year, brought on by a heart attack. He was only 62 years old. This soldier left Vietnam decades ago, but Vietnam never left him.
Wow. So beautiful, Matt. Thank you so much for that. And before we go, I would love to have Charles back to share some historical vet facts.
Sure. Thank you, Leah. This is a historical vet fact here. According to the article, this article was on history.com. The Tuskegee Airmen were the first Black military aviators in the U.S. Army Air Corps, a precursor to the U.S. Air Force, trained at the Tuskegee Army Airfield in Alabama. They flew more than 15,000 individual sorties in Europe and North Africa during World War II. Their impressive performance earned them more than 150 distinguished flying crosses and helped encourage the eventual integration of the U.S. Armed Forces. During the 1920s and 30s, the exploits of record-setting pilots like Charles Lindbergh and Amelia Earhart had captivated the nation, and thousands of young men and women clamored to follow their footsteps. But young African Americans who aspired to become pilots met with significant obstacles, starting with the widespread belief that Black people could not learn to fly or operate sophisticated aircraft. That is a historical fact. Look it up on history.com. Go back to you, Leah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Before we close out, I know that Ms. Connie would love for me to share with you guys, that our listeners, that we will have advertisements available for 10 and 30 second slots. So if you are interested, if you are a vet or someone who works with the veteran community, has a business and wants to advertise, please contact us at info@operationconfidence.org. That's info@operationconfidence.org.
Thank you so much, Thea. We are about to close out. We want to find out, is Attorney Sherrod, are you still on?
Yes, I'm still on the line, Consuela.
Okay, I just wanted to thank you once again for your wonderful contribution to the show today, and to let the listeners know that we can somewhat expect you with your busy show to come back maybe once a month, or how are you going to arrange that coming back with some more legal information?
Yes, absolutely, Consuela. I look forward to doing so. There are many outstanding resources in the legal community available for veterans, and we'll be providing a segment monthly that will have the goal of introducing those resources to our veterans in the community and to supporting Operation Confidence's mission. So I believe that next month we're off, but I look forward to talking to you all in April.
Thank you so much. Well, we're winding down. Matt, you wanted to give that information one more time, that from the beginning of the show, regarding the phone number to contact?
Sure. First of all, I'd like to say how much I truly appreciated the information that was talked about today at the panel. It was excellent, very important information. And I'm so grateful that the speakers were here to share that information with us. This is, again, the Transformative Veteran and First Responder Care information. And if you are a veteran or first responder experiencing traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, or substance abuse, the Gary Sinise Foundation Avalon Network wants to help. For more information, call 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255.
Hey, well, we're coming almost down to a close. Next Sunday, we're going to give a real quick overview of our U.S. Navy veteran, Elizabeth Yoke. Any information on that briefly? We don't have her guest list as of yet, but she's been working diligently on that. Her come on the show with the discussion panel. That's going to be exciting. And we also have some kind of, we understand it's important, but it's so sad. As of next week, we're going to be losing my baby girl, Leah. She has to go back to, she's a phenomenal teacher, and she has to go back to her class. It's just, she's doing some amazing work for us, for our kids, and I think she's taking on a lot. So, Leah, please let our listeners know that you will come back periodically.
Definitely come back. Say hi. Always be tuning in to LA Talk Radio to hear you guys. I'm so happy that Charles is with us now and Attorney Sherrod. I know that they'll do a phenomenal job, especially with Elizabeth and Matt there with you and Ms. Connie. You guys have got it going on. I know that this veteran community really supports the work that you do. And I just want to thank you for allowing me to be a part of this important work.
Well, we got you one more week. So we're not going to let you go yet. But we really love you. And it's kind of sad. You know, you're one of my baby girls. And
well, I'm still here with you guys. I'll still be here in spirit.
I know
next
you
week
will.
And beyond.
It won't be the same without you, that's for sure.
What'd you say, Charles?
It won't be the same without you.
Thank you.
And Matt feels the same way. Huh, Matt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's my lady.
You guys are the sweetest.
Well, we have just wanted to let our listeners know that, as always, we want to remind you that our ultimate awareness, such as our panelists did today, about the urgent need to support our veterans. And Operation's mission is to provide stable housing with a wide range of supportive services, including counseling, employment opportunities for our veterans, especially those who have experienced homelessness and have some type of a disability. So we want you to please get involved with our grassroots mission. If you have anything to share with us, or if you want to get involved, don't forget to contact info@operationconfidence.org. That's info@operationconfidence.org. And we're getting down to the end of our show today, but we wanted to thank our panelists again and Attorney Sherrod for her amazing presentation and bringing in all that informative information. Wasn't it great, Matt, the information that we got today?
Very important.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, Ms. Lois mentioned about stand down. Operation Confidence participated in several stand downs. One in particular, real quick, was at the Los Angeles Convention Center several years ago. And we hosted the Dress for Success for the service women. And it was great. They literally had wonderful outfits that were donated by different companies, corporations, clothing corporations, and had a chance to strut their stuff on stage. And it gave them such a feeling of self-worth and an opportunity to know that they can go out into the workplace and get a job. So we did participate, and we intend to, once stand downs come back, to continue participating in those wonderful events. As Lola said, it's a whole bunch of information and a whole lot of. So that has been wonderful. So as we say goodbye for today, we want to ask you to please don't forget to tune in. Same time, 2:00 Pacific Standard Time for this amazing show, Invisible Heroes. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Hi, good afternoon. Have a great one.
Don't forget your advertising.
Next week.
What else with advertising? If you want to advertise the show, goodbye. Other than that.
That's right. Let's get involved. Thank you so much. And have a wonderful, wonderful week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Operation Confidence Radio Talk Show, America's Invisible Heroes, with Consuela Mackey, only on LA Talk Radio.